It's time for the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show on KSCO.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Mrs. Future.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Bobby, calling in from Southern California.
Yes, I just connected a new Wi-Fi connection here, so I hope it sounds better.
Sounds a little like you're crumpling a piece of paper in your mouth, but we'll put up with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Keep it steady. Steady as she goes, Kevin.
Okay.
Yeah. 79 degrees here in Northern California. Pretty nice. How's the vacation going?
Oh, I just finished. We just dropped off the travel trailer yesterday, and I'm here in Southern California. I went to Kings Canyon up in, just below Yosemite.
Yeah.
And gosh, it was amazing. Yeah. First of all, there's no cell reception. There's nothing,
Yeah.
There's no connection to anything.
Yeah.
But the Rangers are ready for a Starlink.
Are they? Yeah, they get ready?
They
can't wait,
I bet. They're done. They can't wait. But it was very beautiful. It was very hot in the valley. Gosh, it was like 110 or something.
That was like even before this heat wave.
Yeah, so how is it now? Is we still in a heat wave?
Well, we're good. We're good here. I think it's up north that they're really suffering, more towards Oregon and Washington, British Columbia, that sort of thing. We're pretty good down here. I mean, it's 85 in Boulder Creek. I don't know. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And here, 79 in Santa Cruz. Yeah, pretty sweet.
Mm. Yeah.
So we're good. And we got quite a slate of stories today. I pulled the best, the most important salient message that John McAfee had to leave for us.
Yes, Dr. Future did a scan of messages from the recently departed.
Yeah. I had known John back in the days when he was just starting McAfee Antivirus. And I've been tracking him ever since. We're friends on Facebook.
He's what's called a known bonus.
Yeah, essentially. So apparently, he died, though it's hard to say with John what's the truth.
In a Spanish prison, right. I don't know, with a tattoo on his arm that says whacked.
Yeah.
Sounds like he's probably really gone.
Well,
probably.
But we do know that he died once before, right?
Yeah, it's a way of,
on the way out of Belize.
That's true. And how did he survive? He buried himself in the sand for a few days.
No, it was underwater, breathing through a reed.
Yeah. And then he disguised himself as a local by crouching down and wearing a hat and putting mud all over his face and pretending he was like a beach bum.
Yeah.
But anyway. I mean, he's a character. He's really great theatrical.
Adds a lot of color and hopefully some insight into what politics and business is all about.
Yes, and he did compare himself to Jeffrey Epstein when he was getting his tattoo. So, you know, maybe both of them disappeared.
Compared in the sense of he doubted that Epstein was actually committed suicide.
Right.
I doubt that too.
He doubts that strongly. Anyway, that'll be on after the second hour, but after a bunch of other stories, which we have on our slate today, which I'd like to share with you.
Great.
Classically, we try to do our most interesting news segment for the first hour. So we got about 10 minutes. Let's get right
headlines into
it, shall we? Yeah. Well, this is going to be a great month coming up for space. Virgin Galactic got FAA's okay to launch customers to space. And
Richard Branson, he's getting ready to have parties on the edge of the atmosphere.
Yeah, he's going to be one of the first guys to go as a passenger on his own spaceship.
Well, he says he pre-sold 3 years worth of tickets already. So it's just a matter of he's got a full, his dance card is full.
Yeah. The interesting thing here is that Jeff Bezos and his brother are planning to go up on one of Jeff's spaceships on July 20th.
Ooh, the race is on.
Now, why July 20th? Because July 20th is the anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing on the moon. So if he can be a commercial flight that's on the same day, it'll have some significance.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard that Richard Branson might want to try to do it sooner.
which is why today's headline is so important, because he has FAA approval.
Right, yes. See, he may even try it as soon as the July 4th weekend. We'll right. see. We'll right. see what happens there.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a final hurdle, is getting that FAA approval for their years-long effort to send paying passengers on short space trips. Now, remember, this is a very short space trip. This is kind of like Alan Shepard's first flight into space. You basically go up into zero gravity and come back down again. So they're in space for like 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. 5 minutes of zero gravity, and then mm-hmm. you're back into civilization, so to speak.
Right, right.
So there's growing chatter as to whether or not Branson will try to beat Bezos into space. So we'll see. They both have a good chance of being successful in their endeavors. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
Meanwhile,
yeah,
other space news, other people launching things in space.
Yeah.
We have that new hotel.
Right.
That space hotel.
Right. Yeah, there's a big space hotel plan that's still in its early phases, but that was something that was a first ever space hotel. It's planning to be launched in 2023, put together by a company called the Orbital Assembly Corporation. Mm-hmm. Which is a space construction firm run by NASA veterans. And they had a press statement a few days ago that announced that they were going to develop the world's first space hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a facility down in Southern California. Hey, why don't you go visit them, Bobby, in Fontana.
Fontana.
The Fontana facility, yeah. California facility, which will be the main headquarters as it aims to make luxury space holidays a reality.
Yeah, you can tell there's a picture from a Twitter feed that shows the wireframe construction and some people walking through it, so you get a sense of how big this thing is going to be. Apparently, it's going to be about 600 square feet. Not
650
huge. Diameter.
Diameter.
Right. Oh, well, I guess that is pretty big.
And it's got a simulated gravity, because it rotates. So it'll be like about 1/6 gravity, kind of like the gravity on the moon.
Right.
As it rotates.
I wonder if it's going to be a big cheese wheel like the 2001 space station.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah. Except it'll be inflatables, right? Uh-huh. So it's a lot easier construction than the steel of the 2001 Space Odyssey space station.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, in 2001, I remember seeing a Hilton sign.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Hilton in space.
So yeah. So let's see who comes up here.
Yeah. To me, if you're going to spend $250,000, I'd rather have some time at a hotel in space rather than just go up and down.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, this hotel is made for people like you.
So you have
it's
a chance
to
really
provide luxury to guests, including the comforts of being in artificial gravity.
Yeah.
So if your skeleton's feeling a little heavy, head up to this space hotel.
One of the things I wonder about, on the Earth, we kind of get a zero gravity experience in water when we're swimming in a pool. But if there was a pool on the space hotel, would it be any different than a pool on the ground in terms of the experience of the zero gravity?
That is a wonderful thought. There have been a few movies where people were swimming in space pools.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Space water. Yeah.
Just kind of curious.
What was that one called? Was it just a one-word Visitation? No. Anyway, there was one, and I remember where a woman was swimming in a giant pool on her spaceship.
Did she have any special experiences?
Well, you know, it looked like swimming.
There was a EMP from the sun.
Yeah.
The first thing I would do, if there was a pool available, you would jump in the pool and you would be totally protected.
Because the water would keep you safe.
Yeah, it would absorb all the neutrons and protons.
You don't think
particles.
It would fry your butt like a lobster getting hot?
No.
No, remember Bruce was talking about this, putting an envelope around the space capsule.
Yeah.
And it
would
protect them.
Yeah, water
same
would be
idea.
A good protection. It's,
same idea.
Yeah, more fun than lead.
Yeah, especially if you could swim in it.
Yeah, right.
All right, we'll be right back.
Okay, thanks. We'll be seeing you in a minute. Okay, welcome back to the show. So, in terms of other news, NASA's Mars helicopter is going to keep flying. It's going to keep going. It's got 8 flights under its belt now. 8 Red Planet flights. That's 3 more than the targeted flights officially for the original tests. its current extended mission activities are going to look at how that helicopter can help scout out locations for future rovers. And they're going to start seeing how far it can go.
It seems like the rover and the drone are partners.
Pretty much, yeah. To date, the furthest distance the Ingenuity copter has traveled on a single sortie is about 873 feet. That was on Flight 4 back in April. And the longest it stayed aloft is 140 seconds. That was Flight 6. And they are planning to shatter both of those marks in the next few months. It's pretty cool. They're going to try to maybe stretch it to a kilometer.
Wow. That's quite a stretch.
Yeah. They might lose it. But hey, you know, it's accomplished its mission as being a successful addition.
Yeah. Well, I guess the big challenge is that it doesn't have any kind of global planetary geolocation system or
GPS.
Mars location system. So it has to stay line of sight with its targets. And if the rover goes out of sight, then it's a little scary.
I've had that happen to me, even with GPS. I was once using my drone to shoot a sailboat race from the sky and looking around, and I couldn't find our boat. There were so many boats out there.
Oh, wasn't that hilarious?
My God.
Wow. And we searched for it for an hour till the sun set.
We searched after it crashed in the water, yeah.
Yeah.
But fortunately, I had put some flotation on it, you know, so it actually landed on its... Yeah, pontoons made out of those little noodles.
But we couldn't find it because all the sailboats looked alike from drone point of view above.
But it was really scary because the drones returned to home. They have an RTH mode, but the return to home, well, it's where it took off from. And when you're in a boat, you're moving. And so your return to home is going to land it in the middle of the drink.
landed.
That's what happened.
It landed in the middle of the water where we weren't anymore.
So GPS was not my friend in that case. A return to where I am would be a better function.
Yeah. And it was one of those real zen experiences because you had to give it up. You had to really accept a dejected, slumped shoulders kind of way that the drone was gone. You'd sacrificed it for the race. And
everybody on the boat was trying to help me.
Yeah, help you relate. It was an emotional trauma. Yeah. And then we got back into the harbor and docked the boat. And then right as we were getting unloading... We had some neighbors.
Well, and another boat coming
Another boat that had been out there for the sailboat race. This is a dad and his 12-year-old son.
In Australia. And he said, "You guys lose a drone?"
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, serious.
Wow.
I know, right? just amazing.
That is amazing.
I had to give it up, though, before it came back.
Yeah,
I
and then really the 12-year-old had to give it up. He thought he had a drone.
Oh, a 12-year-old found it, right. He was a little sad.
They rescued it, though. That was really...
Did I give him a reward? I don't remember.
You did. Yeah. I don't remember exactly what, but you were very eternally grateful.
Yeah. So GPS on Mars. Yeah, I think they're planning to do that. They're planning to put GPS on Mars. We got a caller, Mrs. Future?
We have lots of calls. We've got Wendell from Reno. He's first up. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Wendell, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Wendell.
Thank you. I'm doing really well.
Good.
I just wanted to respond to Mrs. Future was wondering about the space pool. Uh-huh. Was that possibly the movie called Oblivion?
Oblivion. Let's see. I think it's the movie where...
It's a long spaceship that goes between star systems and it's there for generations?
No. This is one where basically the spaceship is supposed to travel for 100 years and it wakes a couple of people up early because it's having a problem. And then the movie is about their relationship with each other and there's an AI bartender and it's kind of like a little bit of a love story on a foiled adventure.
An interstellar arc starship.
No,
interstellar maybe.
That's not the same one. The one I'm thinking of, there's a water shortage and they live on this space home and it has a huge pool in the space home and they show her swimming around like you described that. Tom Cruise was in it, and I'm pretty sure it was a different movie than the one you're thinking of.
Yeah, sounds cool. Sounds cool. Okay. I love it when Hollywood visualizes these wonderful things, swimming in a giant pool in space.
Yeah, it looked very inviting.
Yeah.
Good job, you guys. Thanks.
All right, thanks, Wendell.
If you did think of it, let us know.
Got a few more calls.
A lot of good books on the topic, but maybe one of our readers might know this story. Okay, let's go on to the next caller.
Okay, let's say hi to Tom in Salinas. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom.
When I think of space movies, I laugh when I think of The Reluctant Astronaut with Don Knotts. That one killed me. That was very funny.
Reluctant Astronaut.
You know, what do you guys think about, back in 57, Russia sent up a couple satellites, Sputnik 1 and 2, and America followed in 58 with Explorer. Those things are still out in space. Do you think there's any value to obtaining them, or is there a possibility to obtaining them? I don't know if the Antiques Roadshow would want them, but...
Well, I'm sure that if you had the skills to go and collect them, you would have the skills to put together the roadshow that would make them very profitable.
Yeah, there's a Korean series called Space Sweepers, which is all about cleaning up the junk collectors from low orbit. But I'm sure there's some valuable junk up there. And
I'm just curious if they could actually get one of them. You know, they weren't big. It's a couple size of a couple basketballs or something. They're still out in space orbiting.
A lot of them fallen out of orbit.
I can just imagine. You probably have to have a lot of skill with a robot arm. I mean, I know how difficult it is to retrieve something that's fallen in the water off a boat. Can you imagine how difficult it is to retrieve something that's out in space when you're up there in your life container? You know?
Well, but I would do it in that case is I'd get a kid, because it seems like you give them a computer and they get right to it and I'm lost.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, according to the net, the oldest satellite still in orbit is called Vanguard 1.
Right, right.
Oh, it's America's second 60s. Satellite. Yeah, stopped communicating with Earth in 1964. But they say it will stay in orbit for centuries. So there you go. That could be valuable on America's roadshow.
And it's still orbiting Earth.
Vanguard 1, yeah.
Still orbiting the Earth.
It's bigger than a basketball, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think it's sort of like treasure hunting, right? If you get a really good story and have fun doing it, there's always interest.
That's neat. I've got to get off there now and go watch the episode of I Dream of Jeannie. You guys have a good day.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks.
All right. Next up, you ready for one more?
Yeah, sure. Is there a message on the board for us, too?
A message on the board. The movie you're talking about is called Passengers. Yes. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Perfect. Passengers, okay. Yes.
All right. Got Sean in Live Oak. Hi, Sean.
Hey, Sean.
Hi there.
Hi. Oh, hey. How you doing?
Yeah. Fine. I just got back from motorcycle ride with my helmet cam going down Empire Grade in Jameson Creek.
What did you see? How is it up there?
It's a scene of devastation.
I would imagine. Wow.
And I'm still downloading it, so I don't know how it turned out. But
Well, you know, I looked at some of the 360 photos on my Oculus headset, and it's pretty profound what happened in the mountains here. They had a series of drones that flew over and took 360 shots, and you can switch from one to the other of them on your headset and check it out. It's remarkable. Yeah.
Well, if these turn out okay, I can put it on a thumb drive and drop it off at the radio station for you.
Ooh, cool. Sure.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
And the other thing is, you were talking about drones. I don't know if you saw that Randall Carlson and his Scablands tour, and they used lots of drone footage to show the massive erosion from the Missoula Lake floods.
No.
I haven't seen that, no.
No.
Okay. One of the things that's real impressive is what they call Devil's Canyon.
Now, that sounds familiar. What makes it impressive?
Well, the thing is Randall Carlson was covering the Missoula flood, and you look at this ridge, and he's saying that the flood actually overtopped the ridge, and what formed Devil's Canyon was some sort of crack or fissure where the erosion processes skirled that out, and so all the water, rather than going over the ridge, started to come through Devil's Canyon.
Oh.
And actually, this is downstream, but from a place, this is from the Palouse River.
Mm-hmm.
But upstream from the Palouse River is another place where they did this, but the Palouse River got captured and rerouted to the Snake River by this other erosion feature.
You know, it'd be fascinating to see these things in computer graphics animation, where you can watch these erosion processes over time and really get a feel for them.
I've seen one special that showed that on the Scrublands sheet flood.
Hmm.
And Randall Carlson describes it calling it a flood, you don't really see what happened. You could think of this more like an inland tsunami. Mm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm. All right.
Can you hold a second, Sean? We got to go to a commercial break.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay. Listen to the Dr. and Mrs. Feature Show. We'll be right back. See you in a minute. Hey, welcome back to the show. Yes, one of the interesting stories that's in the news this week is about a new human that's been dug up called Dragon Man. It's a Dragon Man skull from the Middle East that helps redefine the story of our species. I bring that up because Sean is on the line often as interested in stories that involve early humans. And I'm just wondering if you've seen that, Sean.
I don't think I've seen that one, but I've seen Denisovan Man.
Denisovan. But then this new one's called the Dragon Man. It's very much in the public eye lately, an object of intense scientific fascination and debate currently. And the story goes that a worker at a bridge construction site in a Chinese city of Harbin dug up the skull in 1933, but he hid it in a well to keep it from falling into the hands of the occupying Japanese army. At the time, its existence was revealed by the worker's family more recently and donated to the Hebei Geo University for study. Mm-hmm. It turns out the fossil was one of the most complete human cranial fossils in the world, and that preserved many details that looked at the origins of Homo sapien. It's got a massive dome, lots of room for a brain, but bigger squared off eye sockets, very big brows, wide mouth, plus size teeth. They believe it was about a 50-year-old male. There's been a series of papers that have just been published in a journal called The Innovation that make the provocative suggestion that we are closely related to the Dragon Man, that perhaps it was some kind of hybrid of Homo sapien with Neanderthal, suggesting we interbred with Neanderthal and created a new race.
Well, the thing is by DNA studies and analysis of what Nathaniel DNA we have found.
Yeah.
Neanderthal. We found that,
Is that DNA can still be found in populations of humans living today.
Yeah. If you get 23andMe done, you find out how much Neanderthal there is in your DNA.
Yeah, everybody has a tiny bit, and people who have a lot have up to 2.5%, 3%.
Yeah, I hear they're more telepathic.
Ah, there you go. Obviously a survival skill.
Yeah. That's fascinating. So these old fossils are very interesting. My understanding is that if we took all the old fossils of old humanity before Homo sapien, that you could fit them all into the back of a large pickup truck. Yeah. There's that few left over from before the last ice age.
Hmm. Well, actually, the Clovis Point people, North America, there's only one skeleton that they've found of them in Catalina Island.
Catalina Island, really off the coast of L.A.?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's the only one. The only way that we know the Clovis people are from the Clovis Point's artifacts they lead in some of their quarry site. And until they just uncovered that, they had no skeleton remains of any Clovis people any place on the North American continent.
Wow. I didn't know that. So Santa Catalina Island is probably a great place for looking at origins of early North American peoples. Wow.
What's really interesting is the lost tribes of Israel. There's tribes that actually went over the Caucasus Mountains and became what's known as the Aryan tribes, and they started Germanic tribes and other tribes. But one tribe actually went north to Siberia and ended up in far eastern Siberia, and then the Ainu people, which were the indigenous people before the Japanese, there right now, there's only a couple hundred of them in Hokkaido in northern Japan because they were always pushed up north. Mm. But they are genetically from this, they have Aryan traits in these Ainu people, which is very interesting that after the flood, this group of people actually migrated far east and ended up in the northern island of Hokkaido in Japan. Their genetics are distinctly different than Japanese.
Can you tell by a DNA test if you have any?
Yes, in fact, because the Japanese did, it's known that royalty in Japan had intermixed with the Ainu, and so there's a large percentage of Ainu genes in their genetic makeup.
Oh, fascinating.
Makeup.
Sounds like you might want to get this test, Bobby.
Yeah, I do.
I mean, you're part Japanese.
So. And the other thing, you know, my grandfather was the commanding general in Harbin, which is Harbin in China there at that time period, just before the war, World War II.
You mean in the 30s? The Japanese
in China in the 30s? Yeah. My mother actually visited there once before I was born, obviously. And she said it was very cold and it was a long train ride from
Korea. From what I've heard, one of the darker chapters of Chinese history.
Yeah, it was. Or Japanese history, too.
Yeah, I guess that's true, too.
Oh, but I was talking about that Scablands trip. Yeah, mm-hmm. I just found that again and I emailed it to you. So if you missed the previous one or I forgot to send you it, I just sent it to you.
Okay, I'll check that out. Yeah, take a look at it. Well, fascinating. I think we're in a new era where we're getting more and more information and more tools to be able to analyze the most minuscule pieces of information and getting a lot out of them. So thank you. Thank you for adding to the conversation on this to be continued.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hey.
Now, one of the other interesting stories this week that broke, and it was a bit underwhelming, sadly, was the government UFO task force, which revealed in a scant 8-page little document about what they were willing to tell us about the UFO phenomenon. And I can summarize it in one sentence. Something weird is happening. We're pretty much clueless as to what it is, but more money would be useful
to find out more,
to investigate. And hey, we have got these new AI-powered analytic tools that we can use for looking at these weird alien craft and see if we can analyze what they are. So that's at least what they're willing to tell the public, the classified version.
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's better to do this kind of crowdfunding approach than it is to start a war to get black budget money to fight them as an enemy.
To put out some tantalizing.
That's kind of the Carol Rosen scenario, right? The Werner von Braun said that the secret government was always going to need a black budget, and so they were always going to come up with an enemy that we would need to be saved from, and we would always give them all of our tax money to fight to save us.
Yeah.
Right? And so the alien card was supposed to be the final card, and it sounds like maybe the people who were supposed to do the sales pitch just couldn't go there. They at least wanted to tell the truth.
Well, you need to combine a business with government on this one, I think. And certainly, I bet you if you ask Netflix or Amazon Studios, what are some of the best-selling videos and movies that they're doing? They probably involve aliens.
Sure.
Right? Quite a few.
The great unknown, the plausible science fiction, this could be us. This could be happening. How would we know?
So I ask you, why not get a decent budget from those guys, from Amazon or Netflix, to do a serious documentary on the topic, maybe even a spin-off of some stories.
Sure.
That, from more fiction stories.
Yeah, instead of blurring the line between fear and all those things that motivate people to reach into their wallet and pay you, why don't we just blur the line between movie company and war machine?
I mean, look at the budgets. I mean, my understanding is that
let's just go movie company all the way.
Yeah, my understanding is that Harry Reid, the senator from Nevada, got $20 million for the government to study this topic. $20 million. Now, that is chicken feed for a decent movie.
That's right. Yeah, that's considered starter. That's a starter movie
starter
in Hollywood.
Movie,
you got to
make
three of those before they take you seriously.
Yeah. But I'd say, $100 million is pretty standard. $250 million for the big blockbuster Marvel Comics movies. And that's pure fiction. Do you imagine if the movie makers had access to all the real data? that the government has been collecting and could do something really interesting with that.
Well, there's people who try. I mean, supposedly Oliver Stone movies are based on real data, right? He tries to give us the conspiratorial view of the real data.
Yeah. Okay. Right. All right. Well, that would be interesting. Also, Alessandro, we have a link in our links page at drfutureshow.com/links about this interview with Alessandro, who was supposedly in charge of this latest report.
Yeah, let's talk about that after the break. This fellow was, the fellow who was interviewed on 60 Minutes a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that was a very brief interview compared to what we've got posted.
But he sort of set the tone for all of us to look forward to this UFO announcement.
Right.
Or UAO. What do they call them now?
UAVs.
UAVs, right. So we can't call them UFOs anymore. That's dated.
Well, you
can. Just like everything. We need new names for everything. We need new pronouns. We need new UFO monikers.
Keep it new, right?
Keep it new. Dance as fast as we can. Go somewhere we haven't been before.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see you in a minute. Yes, some interesting revelations that he has put out that wasn't in the report. I'd like to mention that.
Okay.
Yeah, if you have any input on this, let us know.
479-1080. Dr. and Mrs. Future and Bobby B. Wild will be right back.
Welcome back to the show. One of the more tantalizing elements from the report, the UFO report from the government, let's just call it that, was the potential use of artificial intelligence.
Oh, so you did get excited, because I know when that report came out, you felt really disappointed.
Well, it is, in terms of the actual information released. But the interesting thing about AI and UFOs is that they can be used for looking for really unique patterns. Like, you can be able to, say, look at something and see whether or not it has the profile of a shiny balloon in the sky, or a distant birds flying in formation, or drones with LEDs.
I see. So pattern recognition is now part of the process.
And so a lot of these objects are easily mistaken for UFOs all the time. And people with unfamiliar with objects, which are most people, are able to impose their own pattern recognitions on it and see something that maybe it isn't. We tend to sort information through our own biological intelligence algorithms.
We see what we're looking for.
Yeah. Very often, yeah.
So the AIs then we would see if it's what we thought.
Yeah. Now, if what you see is actually connected to what you're thinking and that the interface of the mind to the reality is a real thing, then all bets are off, you know, on this. That means that these objects require consciousness in order to exist, and some of them anyway, that they are a part
of
them. Yeah, so it's a whole, the blending of the inner and
there
the outer
worlds.
There
you go, taking us right down there. The consciousness
But that's a whole
other
thing. The AIs can't do much with that until they are seriously analyzing our brain waves as well as patterns that exist in the environment. They have to look at what's going on inside our skulls as well as what's going on outside of our skulls.
Yeah.
They can do that, and they're starting to do that to the point where we're starting to have language learning by AIs that read brain waves. So it's interesting, but it hasn't happened yet. It's still early on in that evolution. So I think initially, analyzing the movement of objects out in external space is what they're going to be good at. And I'm excited about that. I'm going to see what they can find that don't fit the patterns.
Mm-hmm. So far, finding metal, right? They're finding them with radar. They're finding them by bouncing X-rays off of them.
Electromagnetics.
Electromagnetic.
Video. Uh-huh. Like the jets that we're seeing them are video.
But do you know what the sensor is that's picking up the signal?
Well, there's FLIR type devices.
Oh, so it's
infrared.
Infrared.
Yeah, most of those older ones are infrared. I think they'll have LIDAR now, be able to look at. That's the other thing, is they could spend some money on really interesting tools that could look for them in more dimensional ways.
Mm-hmm. I would think that they could actually mimic aviators or pilots the way they distinguish between enemy and foe, between good and bad, because these Navy pilots can distinguish whether it's a plane or not. So I think it would be easy to take that information, transfer it to an AI machine that could actually make those kind of observations and, analyze that.
What we can imagine. But yeah. Even if they're, even if they're 100 years more advanced than us, let's just say that imagine if you were a modern pilot and you wanted to impress a pilot from the 1920s. What would you, what could you do that would blow away their minds? You know,
right.
I'd say any air show today involving like the Blue Angels or would just stun anybody from 100 years ago. They would think I was alien.
Yeah.
An F-16, F-18 doing aerobatics. My God. Mm-hmm. We have a caller, Mrs. Future?
We do. Let's say hello to Mark from Carmel.
Hey, hi, Mark.
Hi, how you doing? I just thought you guys might like to know William Shatner has a new TV show that I just found out today.
Oh, really? Fiction or nonfiction?
It's called I Don't Understand. He's just doing shows about, like, one show is going to be about dark matter. The first one's about all the stuff in space. Is it going to fall down on us? What do we do with all the stuff floating around in space?
Oh, nice.
And just different subjects.
Do you have the name of the show?
William Shatner. I'll look it up.
I Don't Understand, I think it's
I Don't Understand.
Yeah.
Right. And then it's going to be on RT.
And, RT? Russian TV? RT?
Yeah, RT America, yeah.
Oh, okay.
For all the good American journalists end up going when they get fired.
Yeah. Well,
you just don't know who to trust anymore.
Well, as long as they pay in dollars.
Anyway, right. I'd pass that on to you.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, thanks.
Find
that's really fascinating.
I like William Shatner movies.
Yes, I don't understand. Yeah. Coming soon. Yep. Yeah.
Right there.
Don't understand. All right, put it on.
All right, I look forward to hearing that on John McAfee.
Yes. All right. Yeah, you'll enjoy that.
After the break.
Piece. Okay. It's a game changer.
Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Yep, you bet.
Thanks. So the other thing that I found was interesting about the UFO reports that Alessandro was willing to say was the tremendous number of UFO activity coming in and out of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the interview that is linked to today's Dr. Future Show links on our website.
Uh-huh.
Is very informative. I would say even more informative than the 60 Minutes interview in terms of his theories, if you will, about what data he has been analyzing all these years and the fact that it's all speculative, but some of the information leads him to believe that it may be technology from Earth beings from under the sea, for instance.
That's right. Maybe there was a element of humanity that never left the caves and continued to evolve in vast underground worlds.
Yeah, sort of like the Loch Ness Monster, right? That because...
Well, for humans.
75% of the Earth is covered with ocean, and we don't necessarily know everything that's going on in the ocean.
Right. Maybe there were stories that our species went back to the sea also.
Sure.
And that perhaps there's some advanced...
Mermaids, mermen.
Ancestors.
Ancestors, right.
There. And which we would
whales,
know.
Dolphins, and mermaids. Like maybe there's some humans that do conscious breathing but never come up for air.
And most of that information is on a need-to-know basis, so it would be classified naval information. And until more countries have submarines that could go and visit those areas or sensors that are cheap enough, it's held by the national security states, that information. Until... that technology becomes fast, cheap, and out of control and available to all of us.
Right. But the point also is that even though we can ascribe all these superpowers to the supposed deep state secret government.
Right. But we don't really know.
Alessandro, as an investigator informing the top dogs, had a lot of information that sounded like it was many... scales below that level of knowledge. You know, we're really guessing at a lot of these things.
Well, and thanks, Greg. He reminds us of the Eloi and the Morlocks.
Yeah,
another
there you go.
Advanced evolution of our species. For those wondering about that, that's the reference to the time machine by H.G. Wells.
H.G.
Wells. A future world where Eloi's and Morlocks were the two representatives of our wonderful species. Both gone in very different directions, and yet part of a complete cycle of evolution. Let's put it that way,
not
giving away any plots here. So, the underwater stuff is fascinating. I'm particularly interested myself in the ones that come out of volcanoes, because that would suggest the dimensional shifting capacity that could go between the molecules. We know that molecules are widely spaced already, that even in matter, the distances between molecules are vaster than the differences between star systems on the macro scale.
In terms of scale, right?
Right. So theoretically, we could create resonating craft that go between the molecules. Hmm. If you're aware of them, you can avoid them.
Sure. Well, if everything's energy, you should be able to create field effects that cause the energy to flow where you want it to flow.
Yeah, and that would seem like magic to us, but it would be, as Arthur C. Clarke say, an advanced science.
Yeah, right. Mm. Vibrational science.
Yeah, I don't think we're that far off from that, maybe.
Yeah, well, people are definitely interested in it and thinking about it. I wouldn't say we know of anybody who's mastered it.
No, the breakthrough there is probably going to come from Renaissance thinkers that are both an expert in how electromagnetics work now, like understanding 5G and that sort of thing in detail, and at the same time understanding the electromagnetics of biology and the kind of fields that our cells are generating and how the biology fields could best interact with our electromagnetically generated technology fields.
Right. It sounds like we're going into the world of wireless physics. We want to know how things work even though we can't see them and they're invisible to us, but with our sensors we can detect them and then play with them.
Yeah, I guess you could say it's all physics.
Yeah.
Mathematics. In understanding how it all works.
Mm-hmm.
We're evolving nicely in understanding those things as a species, but if there's anyone that's even 100 years more advanced than us, all these science fiction concepts that we play with today, like teleportation or warp drive and that sort of thing, are just guesses about what we can do. And those are probably not even what we'll do. We'll do something else, but something probably even more mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Like interdimensional travel.
You know, I have to say, I hope you're going to bring up in the second hour the article about the new filaments of dark matter energy that have been mapped from the Meerkat Observatory in Africa.
Yeah. And, I'll do that after McAfee.
Okay. All right. So more space talk.
The connection between Andromeda and our galaxy, the Milky Way, they're on a collision course.
Right.
There seem to be these dark matter connections.
Filaments,
yeah. Right. Right, connecting our galaxy with Andromeda. And you wonder what those do, what those filaments, whether or not they're part of a communications or travel system. Who really knows?
Right.
But they're there, and we're just discovering that they exist.
Right. And we are going to be back after some traffic, news, and weather here on the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show with our science correspondent, Bea Wilder, Bobby.
Oh. And pretty soon we'll be doing air traffic weather.
Right. Meanwhile.
Southbound.
And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. Okay, I was going to play this clip from McAfee in his honor, but I think we'll hold off on that to answer some of our phone calls. I think we triggered a few neurons out in our listening audience with our most recent discussion, and let's go with that.
All right, let's talk to Sergil from Salinas. Did I say your name right? Hi, Serge.
Hi, hello. I had a question from the last caller.
Yes.
Saying about Neanderthals or maybe cavemen and stuff like that.
Yes.
As for the ancestry.com, when they say they're this percentage European or maybe Asian and Latino or Spaniard, does it go far enough to where it says you're 0.0051 Neanderthal or something like that?
Yeah, it does. It has a category for that.
It's much higher than that, believe it. Go ahead, Bobby.
I think it's up to like 12%.
Really?
12%.
I thought it was all like mostly less than 3.
3 to 5, I think, is pretty common.
Yeah.
But I remember.
The Basque people have a high percentage. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. You can. Yeah. The 23andMe test, take it. You'll see for yourself what you are.
Okay.
The only other thing.
That was kind of funny. I mean, it was kind of funny because when people say, you look like a caveman. So it's like,
because you are.
Turns out you've got the right DNA.
you know what's amazing also is that there are some races of our species that have zero Neanderthal. And those are all the peoples that never left Africa. Everybody else who went outside of Africa interbred with them, except the ones that stayed in Africa. I guess there were no Neanderthals down there. That's
That was very interesting because I mean, I was wondering, like, wow, is this how when you go for Ancestry.com and get your results, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even close. Or it's like, oh, yeah, I'm Neanderthal too, or hey, man.
Well, they'll tell you what your genes think they are.
And that looks like we have a few more choices here we can look for now. There's Dragon Man. I'm also wondering if you go way back, what about bonobo versus chimpanzee? I think those are very interesting. Yeah. That's a very interesting division too, because the chimpanzees tended to be more warlike and the bonobo were more peace and love-like in their behavior. And we tend to lean more towards chimpanzee, my understanding, but we also have a tremendous amount of bonobo. So that might explain a little difference in the mentality of different parts of our species around love, war, and peace.
I have one more question.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's weird or funny, but the chimpanzees, they're related more to humans. But then when it comes to pigs, they say the parts could be used more with a human, so... Do they fall apart or get separated to how the body structure works? Or what do you think about that?
Do you understand?
Not quite. I grasp what you're saying there. Bobby, did you catch that?
I didn't catch that.
You mean about whether or not the way we move? You mean certain people move like chimpanzees?
Oh, yeah. I think...
Yes, because they started afterwards walking upright and evolved.
Right.
And that they have like a large DNA as ours. But then like a pig... Their body parts could be used to replace, like, other body parts in the human body. So it's like, were they related, get separated, you know, like, along the millions of years ago and stuff like that?
My understanding is that everyone evolved based on the needs and wants of their location that they were in. The environment helped determine what traits are most survivable in that terrain. So there was almost an infinite variety. If you look at all the different weather patterns on the planet and different climates, there would be different humans for each of those areas, and there were different adaptations, if you will. So it can be quite... So that's why a lot of scientists don't like to try to simplify it in terms of race, because it really isn't. There's such an infinite variety going on across the planet from bioregion to bioregion, from microclimate to microclimate. Now, what makes it more complicated is that our species also likes to range and likes to have the ability to travel and go other places and cross-pollinate, and that further complexifies what is what.
Okay, thank you, and I love your show. Yes, thank you.
All right, well, thanks for calling, Serge.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay,
all right.
Thank you.
Take care.
Have a good day.
Yeah, you too.
Next, we have Terry from Felton. Hi, Terry, welcome to the show.
Is that the Colonel?
Hi, no. It's not the Colonel.
Okay. It's another Jerry. Okay.
Quite the opposite.
Quite the opposite. Okay.
That's good. So this is a question for Bobby. I think it was a few weeks ago, maybe a couple weeks ago, you were talking about the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine. And Dr. Future, you were saying that you were thinking about getting that one because it didn't have the mRNA.
Yeah, then he told me it did, and I was disappointed.
So I just wanted him to briefly explain that again, because I just barely caught it. I was doing dishes and didn't get the conversation.
Sure, Bobby, you feel good about talking about the Johnson mechanism?
Yeah. What they do is they use this genetic gene therapy where they take the core of the mRNA, but instead of using these nanoparticle lipid layer wrappings, they actually use an adenovirus, but they actually get into the cell and produce spike proteins using that mRNA technology. But it's just the vehicle in the way it gets into the body. So that's the difference between that. There are other new types of vaccines that are coming out, which are like the Novavax, which doesn't use any genetic therapy or,
more of a traditional vaccine.
Well, no, it's not a traditional vaccine. Those are the Chinese and the Russians, the Sinovac.
Oh, I see. Okay, no, so those are
those are traditional, but they are even less effective now, and they have their own issues to deal with. But the Novavax might be a better option. And
is that going to be available in this country?
Yeah, yes, it is. So I believe it was trying to get FDA approval. I don't know if it got it while I was gone or not. I should look that up. But it's just about to be approved. Yeah, which I should look that up.
So if you were going to take a vaccine, that would be the one.
Well, yes. it works on a totally different mechanism. So,
yeah. How's that for you, Terry?
Thank you so much. I am curious about...
Yeah, I just Google search mechanism of Johnson & Johnson vaccine. You'll get all kinds of information.
All right. Okay. You're big fans of a blogger, Tom Campbell, from the UK,
yeah.
too. He goes
John
through all that stuff. John Campbell.
Yeah. John yeah. Campbell. Yeah, John Campbell podcasts. Talks
right.
about that.
And now this. We'll be back after this. Sponsor break.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Yes, we have another caller. I'd like to take our caller and then get in this John McAfee piece that I put together for you. And take about 11 minutes to do that.
All right, so
let's take a caller.
Steve, we want to talk with you for about a minute.
Yeah, hi. Hi, hey, Futures.
Hey, how you doing?
Knew the guy who ran, he lived here in Salinas, ran Catalina Island for the Navy during World War II.
Yeah.
His name was Fred Edwards. And one day I was interested in archaeology, and I said, all that stuff you dig up from those things you build down there, what do you do with all that stuff? And you know what he said?
What?
He said, I throw it in the damn ocean.
Not his thing, huh?
That's
throw it in the damn, I can't
he didn't
stand
have
those
a need
people
to know.
Bug me all the time.
Oh, that's funny.
Thanks for that, Steve.
Yeah.
That's very insightful.
Yeah, well.
Fred Edwards, what a guy.
Yeah.
I'll see you later.
All right, thanks for calling. You know, those guys should have iPhone 12s, you know, with a LiDAR so they could at least scan these objects in 3D and save some data on them. That would be so cool.
Right.
Okay, so I want to play this. This is a 10-minute piece that I put together on John McAfee, and is really, I think, some of the essential information that he wanted us to know as the public, as his position of being the zillionaire, starting the McAfee antivirus company, and being in signals intelligence before that at Lockheed, analyzing enemy communications. The guy was closest that I think we've publicly known as somebody that would usually be working for the NSA or CIA or something like that.
Yeah.
But he's public.
He's like a born experiment kind
of
guy.
Yeah, he
right.
has that kind of
on
his own. Mindset of being looking under the wiring under the board, so to speak,
right.
of what's creating civilization. Anyway, this was his download. I took out a lot of the colorful language so that we could play it on the air for you. It's from an interview that was done at a YouTube channel called Demand the Truth.
Okay,
so here's the clip. Here we go.
Well, keep in mind that it's advantageous for a political party to be able to blame another political party or even a foreign government for an election. So, of course, the blockchain is not going to be embraced by any politician right away, because that removes their ability to say it was meddled with. The Russians did it. The Democrats did it. Somebody did it. So it's advantageous to have this ambiguity in the election process. As for me, if anybody out there believes that I could ever be president, you need to stop smoking rainbows, because people, that's not going to happen. I'm John McAfee. We know that. Can't happen. And so why am I running? I'm running because I get the national stage like I did in 2016. Ran on the Libertarian banner, got the national stage. I need that again, because I really need to say what I perceive is wrong with our country and what steps we can take to prevent this. Not who to elect, because it doesn't. Please, God, people, do you think it matters? Do you really think it matters who's president? Can you point to any specific thing in your life which changed for the better or the worse because of the election of a president? It doesn't touch you. It doesn't touch your life. What touches your life is the real government behind this political play. And if you think there's no real government behind, then you simply haven't used your head, people. Because, keep in mind, we have agencies like the CIA, arguably the most powerful organization on the planet, who have career personnel. You don't quit the CIA and you're never fired. You may get whacked, but you don't quit and you don't retire. It's a lifelong job, during which time you continue to work for the good of the country. And I truly believe these are not evil people. They're not satanic people trying to take over the world. No, they're really trying to do what they think is right for America. But the CIA has a word for politicians. They call them transients. It's a very important word to understand because it will give you a clue into what's really happening. The CIA has career people who spend their lives digging into the depths of international relations, political alliances, cultural histories, religions, language, and everything else, such that you could never train a president in 100 years, what the collective of the CIA knows. And they think these transients are incapable of running this country because they are oblivious to the real problems. And the real problems are so complex, you can't explain them to someone as dull as a politician. So they feed Congress and presidents what they need in order to motivate them to act in ways that they want. Prime example, for some reason, God knows why, the CIA needed Iraq to be neutralized and neutered as a power in the Middle East. And the only way to do that was to invade it. Well, how the hell do you get someone to invade it? Well, you tell the president that there are nuclear weapons hidden in that country. That'll motivate a president. And it did. Were there nuclear weapons? No. The CIA knew it. The American public knew it. We all knew there were no weapons there. Everybody knew except the president and Congress. Please, God, see the truth of this, people. We have a shadow government. It's not even a shadow anymore. It is the government. And as I said, I don't think they're evil people. They're trying to harm America. They are just taking it upon their shoulders to do what they think is in the national interest. And they rule by a very clever trick they invented in the 60s called need to know. I mean, if the president says, do you guys really have aliens? You think they would tell a president is there for 4 years and gone? No. No, of course not. They'll say, well, Mr. President, I regret to say that you do not have a need to know. That's a legal answer to the president of our country. Here is the problem, people. So why are we paying attention to who's driving this automobile with a broken steering wheel? Because it doesn't matter who's sitting there. That car is going to go where it wants, and our system is going where it wants until we all wake up to see the truth. Now, people say, what do we do? I don't know. Does it matter? Because this much I do know is when the critical mass of the populace all see the truth, you don't need a plan. It just happens. Now, if you're in a movie theater and there's a fire and everybody's engrossed in this movie, you don't need a plan. Let's see. So first of all, let's see, I'm going to wake up the guy next to me, instruct him to wake up the guy next to him. Then when, no, you yell fire. And what happens? Everybody turns around and goes, God damn, you're right. And we all escape. I don't know how people, don't ask me that. You don't, nobody knows, but I do know that we have been blinded by this twisted system, not evil, no, but twisted, not what we intended. We did not form this country so that a covert group of spies could run it, no matter how good they may say it is, and maybe it is, but it's not what we intended. It's not what's right, and this is what must change. Now, you ask for, please give us some practical answer. Well, let's pass a law saying that not just presidents, but all of Congress, and maybe even state senators, or maybe even local sheriffs, have the right and the need to know certain things. And let's list those things. Maybe aliens is one of them. That'd be fun, wouldn't it? Go to your local sheriff in 2 years and see if you will find it. So, no, this is the problem, people. If there one person listens to me and looks around and says, God damn, you're right, then I've done my job. Critical mass of human consciousness. I know it sounds weird or cultish or insane, but it's how it works, people. Look at the great revolutions in art and science and thought and government. Were any of them planned? No. Nobody planned the Russian Revolution. Nobody planned the American Revolution. It just happened out of circumstance when everybody wakes up and goes, good God, the British are never going to let us in peace, are they? And the answer is no. Two countries throughout the Caribbean, and this is what people are forgetting, the most corrupt series of countries in the world, all virtually owned by the United States and the CIA. You don't need a common backdoor. You just need a backdoor to each social media site. In fact, you don't need backdoors anymore. There are bots that can run around and collect everything happening on social media, which is fed into massive supercomputers that process and make sense out of this trillions of disparate pieces of information. This is how it works. And I wish there were an easy way to say that, but that's the truth on it. But the issue is not the back doors, because if we close them, they'd open new ones. And the issue is not cooperation between Google and Facebook and others. Cooperation with the government is not just that. And the issue is our surveillance state, which is out of hand. We watch out for one another as human beings. In tribal society, there's always someone watching, right? Why? I mean, we're a family, we're a tribe. In America, we're a tribe. It's a big one. And we look out for each other. And so watchfulness in our government is required. Let's watch the Chinese and the Koreans and the Russians and everybody for that matter. I have no problem with that. Now, who are we watching now? We're watching ourselves. The government is watching its citizens. Why? Because unless we're watching you, we don't know if you're a bad actor or not. You could be a terrorist. You could be anybody. So do you see the insanity? We have to remove your right to privacy in order to protect you from those elements that don't deserve right to privacy. Please wake up, people. This is so tragic. This is so tragic. And as to advice, well, do only what you want and nothing else in life. And everything will come to you. I don't know how it works. I wish I did. I mean, I'm a math major and should demand that all things have a formulaic explanation. But for this one, I don't. I just know that if you do what you love, and you do it 18 hours a day, 7 days a week with love. When I started McAfee, I woke up every morning going, thank God I can go back to work. And then after an 18-hour day, I just couldn't stay awake any longer. I'm going, no, please, God, I want to work more. Just like kids playing when they're young. They're playing their games. I don't want to come in. I don't want to go to bed. That was me. And that should be everybody. Everybody. Because if that's not how you approach your work from your true feelings, then get out. Because it will destroy your soul and your mind and your body eventually. That's the only advice I can give.
There you go. That's McAfee's advice. Follow your joy.
That means you know why you're alive on this planet.
You're doing what you're here to do.
And you're free to do it. That's the really fundamental thing that is the divine consciousness, is that your humanity is yours. It's your gift to do with what you want. And that is the spirit of America. That's what we represent, is that priority. That the freedom of the individual is the reason we're alive. You know, we're not here to take advantage of each other. We're not here to squelch each other. We're here to cooperate with each other if we can.
So, Mrs. Future,
yeah,
what is your superpower?
Well, what do you think is my superpower?
Communication?
Yes, I would say being articulate and being open and being able to listen, being able to feedback what I heard, and then put a spin on it that makes you question your own beliefs. Mm. I like all of those things.
Yes, so good at it. Bobby, what's your superpower?
Mine?
Yeah.
I have a learning disability.
So,
and that's a superpower, huh?
It is.
Beginner mind.
It truly is. And it all started on your show. This happened about 3 years ago.
What happened? Did somebody make fun of you or somebody call you?
No. You invited a guest from Colorado, and she was an expert on dyslexia and ADHD. Mm-hmm. And she, when I heard the show, I didn't even know I had dyslexia. And even after the show, I didn't believe it. But then I went to her website and played all these videos back, and I realized, wow, there's a lot of people that have this same problem about, well, reading or processing information and using visual. But then when I go on YouTube, and then I realize what I had. I had dyslexia. And
now that you've identified the pattern, yes. How have you been able to turn it to your advantage?
Well, you know, there are books out called The Dyslexic Advantage. And what they talk about is, like, Richard Branson, you mentioned him.
Yeah.
He's outed himself as being dyslexic. Einstein, for instance, is probably dyslexic. Da Vinci is for sure dyslexic.
Don't tell me Tesla.
Now, how is this your superpower? What superpower capacity does it give you?
A certain way of looking at things?
Well, most CEOs of large corporations have some dyslexia. Mm-hmm. And what their advantage is, they're not experts in very specific things. What they are, they're very good generalists. And what they do is they do things, what's called systems theory, where you look at things as systems and how they interrelate. Mm-hmm. So like you take Da Vinci, you know, he was good with drawing. Dyslexics are very good with their hands and drawing, but also he was advisors to lots of courts and kings and things. And he was very good with military things, but he would take all his learnings and put them into different systems and see how they interrelate or how they helped each other.
Yeah.
And so I can step back and look at the bigger picture of things and see how they interrelate to the science that's being discovered on your show right now. So that's my superpower.
Mm. Yeah, awesome.
Zoom out. The zoom function of consciousness. Mm-hmm.
Well,
see patterns.
You definitely use it well, my friend.
If it wasn't for your show, I wouldn't have realized this. And I wish I had known this when I was starting college. You know, I would have done a lot better.
I would like to have a Zoom in college.
Yeah.
So it's learning to turn a bug into a feature, huh?
Well,
yes.
Yeah, exactly. That was from the 80s in the Silicon Valley world. It's not a bug, it's a feature.
That's right.
First came out.
It is what
and
it is.
Turn your problems into assets.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of which, what would you say is your superpower?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I'm a communicator as well. I think seeing the bigger pictures, I relate well to autistic thinking along those lines because I see patterns, group patterns all the time. It's a normal way of thinking. I think of who should meet who, you know, in terms of people. I see people as different resonant fields and I sort of see alignments where I feel like certain people should know each other. I'll try to make that connection, but only if they want to. You know, I feel like that this is all just a natural ability. And I think many people have that. There's every social tribe has people who connect. If you look in your life, everyone's got a connector that help you do the social events. So I think I'm part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So you're sort of the strange attractor, huh? That can get people to align their gravities with each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And see the bigger picture together. I think when people look at the bigger picture together, it's a lot of fun. That's why we have our late night mad glad scientist parties, because it expands our understanding of what is. Uh-huh. That's what I love about Santa Cruz is there's so many amazing people that you can do that with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so McAfee, I met him when I was doing a book on computer viruses back in 1988.
Called Virus.
Yeah.
By Alan Lundell.
And I enjoyed hanging out with him. He's telling me all about viruses in his RV. We were traveling around his RV. And I felt he should connect with John Draper, you know, Captain Crunch, one of America's first major hacker, if you will.
So, definitely two flavors of nerd who deserve to meet.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, and it just so happened that they were both in the same location at the same time, but they were like two ships passing in the night. So I called up John and asked him if he could come over and jump on board the RV as we were going to a place in Alameda, not too far from his apartment, into the college there where McAfee was going to devirus them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got together, and so I got to record that. I probably still have
so
that on
you video. Interviewed yeah. John McAfee for wow. your book, Virus.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, because I was curious about the phenomena of viruses, like biological diseases happening in our machines already, and it's only 1986. Holy moly, Mr. Bill, what's going on?
Uh-huh.
So McAfee was one of the ones that helped me unravel why computers were having viruses.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that was the early days. He probably hadn't invented the McAfee's
well,
software at that point.
His software was mostly created by
J.J.
Webb.
J.J. Webb, right.
Scotts Valley area.
Who gave
Boulder
him
Creek.
The grep function.
Yeah. Yeah, he could tell you.
Here, this will bring find a piece of text, and yeah. if it looks like this, you'll know.
And yes, and there was also the inventor, the father of viruses, but that's another story.
Mm-hmm.
We have a caller, Mrs. Future?
We do. We have a caller. It's Billy. Hello, Billy.
Billy. Hi, girl.
Hey, Billy. How's it going?
How's it going?
It's good. It's good. We're having fun.
Yeah.
I'm getting closer to doing some psychedelics. I'm getting closer every day.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Which one are you thinking of?
Very interesting.
I'll probably start with microdosing LSD.
Oh, my. Yeah. Well, careful you yeah. don't get in trouble announcing it here on the public airwaves.
I don't care. I think, and that's what my superpower is.
Sunshine.
That's your superpower, being yeah. able to say controversial things on the public airwaves?
That's exactly it, that I'm willing to say things that I know people are going to dislike me for, and I don't mind taking whatever comes, and that's my superpower. I can speak courageously.
All right.
So if you take the microdose, will you call us?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. If you're on, when you do it,
yeah, I'd love to hear where you're at.
Uh huh. So, is this going to be a revisitation for you? Have you taken like a decades off or something?
Many decades off. Okay. Yeah, you know, I used to take it just for fun and laughs and stuff, and now I'm going to try to be a little more intentional and really just do a reset. Since the wife died and since I'm stuck in my rut and everything, I think it's time for a reset.
So I have an idea for you. You should check out Stephen Greer and his exercises that allow you to consciously meet an extraterrestrial, right?
He
calls it CE5.
CE5 protocol.
Which means close encounter of the fifth kind, which means that you invite them and they come to visit.
I've been trying to get them to come to visit. Every time I'm out alone in a field at night.
Well, go online and get his protocols. He's got instructions, and apparently it's been working for lots of people all over the world.
And you think it's a good idea to actually visit the aliens while tripping? Or not?
Well, I just think it might increase your... It might open the doors of perception that allow you to recognize
I would recommend, in that case, hanging outside at night, maybe with the right crowd.
Yeah, you need to, surround yourself with love, right? Be in a love field vibration. So.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to hang out with you guys. That's it.
Yeah.
I'll call you when I'm ready to drop and come
over. Okay, well, we've been ground control for various people in our lives.
Barbara was the best person in the world to trip with. If I was living with some friends, the only wife you wanted to show up was mine. Because she was just, she had done it before and she knew what was going on. And she just had that sort of non-judgmental, I'm here to help kind of attitude.
Was she the kind of person who would communicate with you from the other side?
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Oh, no.
That intention.
No.
You don't know?
No. We haven't spoken since she's gone. I don't believe in such things.
Oh, well, then
my belief system, and that's why I got to take the neuroplasticity psychedelic to change my mind.
Well, you might meet aliens, but you won't meet your former wife. Okay.
Well, maybe there's a connection here. Anyway, it's certainly a strange world, and we should understand it more deeply. You know, it's a big part of the human experience, wouldn't you say?
I would say.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, kid.
All right, man. Thanks
Be
for
right
calling.
Be right back. Thanks for the call. Bye-bye.
Love you too. Well, what's new in my neural pathways here? Gabby.
Bobby. Gabby.
And then we have guests. Make one correction.
Yeah.
Son, you were correct. It's like 1 or 2% of the European population has Neanderthal. It's not 12%. So,
oh, well, thank you. 2%. See, my memory's not that bad. Not all the time, anyway. When it comes to Neanderthals, I guess it sticks.
2% Neanderthal, then, is a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah, 3 is almost off the charts. That's what I recall. And because that's like how much you have.
When do you start walking different? What percentage did you start walking different?
How would we know? We need some science on that, Al.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Well, Gabby was commenting on her understanding of psychedelics. The neural pathways are fired more, and you have new patterns of thinking that you might not have seen before because of the extra firing of the neurons.
Okay. So your brain's moving faster.
Yeah.
So you get to see more colors and stuff.
But he said, if you want that experience, microdosing isn't the way to do it. Microdosing.
A cautionary note.
Sub-threshold thing where you might not notice any effect. It's too low to trigger off the neurons.
All right. Well, Billy, you're out there. Here's some advice from a...
If you want that
from
experience,
a veteran.
And she says that if she was going to do this, Son would be her choice to be with a Mrs. Future.
Yeah, I'm very
reassuring. Watch over her like a fairy druid.
Sure. Yeah. That's me. If you're going to play in nature, I'm here to let you know it's all okay.
A trip master. Yes, that's what you are.
Yes. Well, my whole life is a really good trip. So.
And Jersey Girls.
I'm happy to invite the rest of the people on board.
And our Jersey girl says that she has 80% less Neanderthal DNA than most.
Okay. Good to know.
So that level of thinking there is almost pure Homo sapien. Thinking.
So she goes down from 2% to 0.2%.
Something like that. Yeah,
okay.
I didn't know such advanced beings lived in Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, see, the data's coming in.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Seek and you will find. All right, we've got a few more calls.
Okay, we got some callers on the line?
We do. All right, we're going to say hi first to Marcia. And hi, Marcia. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Marcia.
Hello, Son. Hey, Al and Bobby. It's so nice to know it's Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yay. Yes. Keeps coming around.
That's right.
So we can rely on some things, can't we?
We can. We can rely on the future because consciousness is always creating things that are better. We just might have to clear out some of the stuff that isn't on the way.
Yes, you have to realize of the time essence of it all. I'm dyslexic, and my gift is that I come in the back door.
Well, how's that work?
Well, it seems that my ideas are rather unique when it comes down to getting a solution. I see things in a different way, and all through my childhood it was that way. And people let you know that I maybe wasn't thinking correctly, but as it lended its truth on the path, I was able to use it in my profession for 50 years.
And what was that profession, Marta?
I'm a hospice nurse in the independent contractor.
Uh-huh.
First years in Sunrise Hospital, in a brand new hospital down in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I worked a 50-bed ICU, and I got a really good introduction to the physical body and to near-death experiences.
Sure. Yeah, you'd be around that all the time.
Fascinating.
Now, a lot of people would find that difficult, but it sounds like you really learned a lot from
enjoying
it.
I've heard that before. You know, how can you do this?
How can you be around death all the time?
How can you do anything else?
I'd say it takes a special person to be present at that gateway.
Yes, a gateway angel.
The miracle at the end of life.
It's been so amazing. I got to hold my mother as she passed, and I got to be with my dad, my aunt, my uncles.
Wow.
I actually can say that something happened with me and my mom that I've never had before, and that was as she passed, her ectoplasm, I was breathed it in, and it actually had taste to it.
Wow.
And it just, like, so then, therefore, if it had taste and it had matter, is how I look at it. And so,
did it come out of her mouth?
It came out of, I don't know, she was like on my chest. like a baby would be.
Really? And you were caressing her? You were like hugging her or holding her?
Oh, yeah. I was in bed with her for the last 8 hours, mm-hmm. you know, holding her. And she says, oh, what a lovely looking gentleman. Oh, he's so well dressed. He must be a doctor. And then she saw a bright light. She says, that's the brightest light I've ever seen. You know, so I got to be there in that wonderful time and have my children there and my siblings there. So I knew she was going to pass. I often know these things. Sure. So I was so glad I got that portion of the time mm-hmm. and just held her till she, if you start breathing slowly, they do too.
Oh,
and
beautiful.
So it's kind of a way that you are linked with them.
So you're guiding them, guiding them to that.
He was very old. They're all old. They're almost centurions, all my people. I keep them around a long time.
So did you feel like you did you feel like you started to go where she was going?
I mean, they always want to take me with them.
How far have you gone in that direction to see what's on the other side? How far?
Well, I've been there already. I passed into the light from a heart attack after L-tryptophan, the first GMO. I was on a road to pick someone up and from surgery, and I told God I couldn't stay. You know, he took care of the car while I was in the light. And I said, you know, oh, God, don't let me hurt anybody, because I knew I was on the road driving 70 miles an hour. Had people passing me on the right, but I wanted to go slower. And so I went into the light, and I remember thinking, well, I'm in a car driving. Don't let me hurt anybody. And by the way, I have a destination. I'm picking someone up from surgery. You know, so then I was thrown back in the car that had gone a couple miles without me steering. It was God's angels, I guess. And so then that I was able to bring to my clients as a hospice nurse the hope and the choice that you have. You have a choice, and there was more for me to do. But I wanted to ask you, did you
Thank you. What a beautiful share. Appreciate that.
I love you guys. Did you get to see the 9 pages of the first released report of the security?
I saw the unclassified version. Yes, I did.
Yeah, the 9 pages?
Yes.
And know that there's 70 more that they have? And know that they were something they were going to let loose today. Did you get to hear it?
No, I haven't heard.
Thanks for tuning us in. Marcia.
Yes, I have to let you.
We have one more person in three more minutes, and
you know,
I really don't want to let you go, but I appreciate your call.
Thinking of you all. Be safe and love God. That's how I look at it.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Love you and appreciate the call.
We'll talk again. Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'd love to introduce her to our friend Annalise, who is the same profession.
They may know each other.
Yeah.
Let's give the last minute here to Colonel Terry. Hi, Colonel Terry. How are you?
Hey there.
First of all, I want to compliment Annalise, the last caller.
That was Marcia, actually.
I think she should meet Annalise, our friend,
is also an end-of-life doula, we call her.
Marcia. I've also had near-death experiences, as in plural. I'm confident that there is a continuity of consciousness, as I have shared with you before. I will cite a book called Adventures Beyond the Body by William Bowman, quite an interesting theorist, okay?
Excellent. Who isn't interested in that, in the great beyond, right?
Yeah, well, speaking of the great beyond questions, he says at page 108, the biological brain is not the origin of our consciousness. Instead, it functions as a temporary biological transfer and storage device for consciousness.
Like a battery almost, huh?
Yes. Consciousness or computer memory. Consciousness is a continuum of our non-physical energy extending its awareness through multiple frequencies, meaning other dimensions of the same universe.
Sounds right to me. I think you're onto something there.
The field. Many call it the field.
Right.
Yes, that's also true. Again, I compliment her comments. And Mrs. Feature, you should have a program devoted to that concept alone.
Oh, to passing end of life and soul evolution. And
we could do that.
The great beyond.
And bring our Annalise and Marcia on.
I like that idea. Well, we'll definitely keep trying to bring it more into our Dr. Future show, because I really like the mix of science and spirit and art and material world here, creativity.
And these are forces that touch us all.
Yes, they are. And they may be blended more and more.
in recognition in the near future.
Yeah, I think you're right, Colonel.
So.
Keep up the good work. Love you, beautiful.
Thank you. Love you too, Colonel Tarian. Thanks, everybody, for what a great day. I'm so happy we're all in this world together. We all bring so many special gifts of conscious awareness. Yeah. And
I'm glad you're all here. And we have more links on our links page that talk about similar topics that we thought of covering today. But this is what we did.
That's right. The big universe. Yeah. We can only squeeze a little tiny bit into this hour.
DrFutureShow.com. Just go to our links page. More fun.
All right, everybody. Hope you have a great week until next Future Tuesday in the future.
Yeah.
And this is KSCO Santa Cruz.
Bye, Mrs. Future. Bye, Bobby.
Bye,
Thanks, Bobby.
Bye, bye.
Love you.